This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. Each week, Diana Winston, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, offers a talk about mindfulness to deepen our understanding and cultivate well-being. Thanks for joining us.
Today, I'm going to talk about ethics in mindfulness, and I'll be doing a series on mindfulness and ethics, and we can see how they fit together, and I'll say more about why. But well, I guess I'll start with that it feels like we live these days at a time when ethics has gotten we're like a culture at sea, right? There's such a deep, profound loss of ethical behavior, of moral guidelines, and certainly we're seeing that in the public arena. There's a glorification of what is unethical, and it's very disturbing to be in a time like this. And so that doesn't mean we can all say, oh, okay, well, if everybody else has no ethics, neither should I. That's one approach I think that a lot of people may be taking. But another approach is to say, well, actually, how do I look more deeply about what ethics means to me, and to live more fully from that place? And then as I embody that, I become a force of ethical behavior and integrity in the world. You know, of course, religions have classically been a guide for moral behavior, but much of that has gotten distorted, as you've seen probably, and many people don't follow guidelines, and or many people are not religiously affiliated. So if you look at different religions, you'll see different kind of ethical guidelines, and they're very similar across most religious traditions. But you don't have to have a religious background to practice ethics. There's so much teaching and writing and treatises written on how to have kind of a secular ethics, and you know, mindfulness is rooted in Buddhism, but we teach it in a very secular, non-religious way. And I'm going to present it to you in a completely, I hope, non-religious way. I don't have any intention of making it religious in any way, because we can have secular ethics that are based in non-harming and kindness. And we can find a way to live in the world where we live in our integrity, in a place of non-harming and kindness. And despite what is happening around us, we can live it. And more people, as we do this, we become forces of good in a world that so deeply needs it. So as I do this series over time, we're going to explore how mindfulness can, what is the relationship specifically to our mindfulness meditation practice and our mindfulness in daily life, and how it impacts our behavior. And so this class is a lot about mindfulness of behavior, because people report that as they practice meditation, they notice a change in their behavior. They notice that they may be less reactive. They notice that they may be less judgmental. They might notice that they're not so quick to react in their speech or actions. They might find themselves being more compassionate. So what I've noticed over time, and having taught for, you know, a very, very long time, is that I see that when people meditate, there is this general increase in the kindness level. And there is even research, you know, there's a number of research studies looking at, does mindfulness make you kinder? And I think I've shared some of them in the past. One of them was something we did at UCLA it was like a video game where people had to practice generosity through giving like digital coins. And it was all a game, right? It wasn't real coins. And so some of them they measured how many times people donated coins. And then some people listened to a meditation, and after they practiced mindfulness, not very long, I think it was like a 12-minute meditation, then they saw how many times they donated the coins. And they found that the people who meditated were about 2 to 3 times more likely to donate than the people who didn't. So it's interesting. I mean, that's very, very, you know, non-conclusive. That's a study. Actually, the study's been replicated twice now. A student of mine then replicated it in another place, and they found similar results. And then there's like a very famous study about that was done a couple of times with would mindfulness practitioners give up their seat more readily if they than the average person. And so they set up this kind of like mock situation where after they had gone through a 6-week mindfulness course, they went into a waiting room to be tested. There was one chair, they sat down in it, and the other chair was occupied. Somebody shows up and they have a broken leg. And the real test was, is the mindfulness practitioner going to give up their seat or not? And there's something, I forget that what it's called, but there's an effect when somebody else is not doing it, other people don't do it. So the other person didn't do it, and then they wanted to see would they give up their seat. And again, about twice to three times more frequently, I think it's even like 30 to 40% more frequently, the mindfulness practitioner gave up their seat. So there are these linkages that people are trying to explore with the impact of mindfulness on our behavior. Does it lead to more altruistic behavior, more pro-social, more kinder behavior? And I will certainly say that from an anecdotal perspective, but an anecdotal perspective of teaching, hundreds and thousands of people, this is what I have observed. In the class, in this, so as I said, it's a kind of a series that I'll do in this one, and then each time I come back, we'll explore how mindfulness can directly impact our actions, and then how our actions impact our mindfulness. So we're going to be bringing mindfulness, and you're going to have, I'm going to ask you to do a little assignment, bringing mindfulness to our behavior to explore how to live more skillfully in the world. And to kind of, as I offer different ethical behaviors, you get to like try them out. This class is an overview, but you can explore and see what happens. So one of the things that's really important to me with secular ethics, with ethics that are it is that it's not an edict from on high telling you thou shall not dot dot dot. Okay, that is not how we're going to be exploring it. Instead, we'll be learning tools and practices and guidelines for us to examine our own behavior and make our own decision in ethics that are rooted in common sense, your own past experience, and your deepest values. So it's really a very deep inner practice of how do I want to live in the world and who do I want to be in the world? So ethics are guidelines for behavior that are rooted in our deepest values. That's how I like to define it. Guidelines for behavior that are rooted in our deepest values. They are moral principles that govern a person's behavior or the conducting of an activity. So morals to me are more like morals are kind of like the values, and ethics are connected to the action and behavior. And that might not be the exact, dictionary definition of how you define those, but that's kind of how I put them. And I like to use ethics, the word ethics, rather than morals. I feel like it's a little more neutral of a word. The e ethics are relational. They're about our impact on others and the world. And as I said, there are certain clear values that are connected to it, like kindness, compassion, non-harming, respect. And those seem to be the bottom line values with ethics. Bottom line, I guess I would say qualities or values connected to ethics. So one of the ways we can look at this is ethics. We'll be exploring what it feels like to be ethical, not because we want to create, because it's some sort of like false perfectionism or goody two shoes or something like that, but because when we behave in a way that is ethical, we often feel good about ourselves. So it's not what I define it, so it's about integrity, right? And I define integrity as what makes me, not what makes me feel good, but what makes me feel good about myself. That's integrity. So you see the difference? What makes me feel good versus what makes me feel good about myself. Integrity and living an ethical life involves It involves trust, creating a creating qualities of safety within yourself and that others can really relate to. When you meet an ethical person, you know you feel safe because you know that person is not, and to the best of their abilities, going to harm you or others. And it's actually a beautiful quality when you can feel the impeccability of someone who has integrity. So I just want us to take a moment to just, if you want to close your eyes for a second, and bring to mind someone who you consider to be ethical. Either someone you know, someone from history, someone you've read about, a dear friend, a teacher, just somebody who really represents ethics to you. And as you bring them to mind or think about this person, recall what it might be like or what is it like to be in their presence? What qualities do you feel like they have? If you could put a name to those qualities, what do they have? And what do you feel inside yourself in their presence or when you think about them? How do you feel inside? Okay, so if your eyes are closed, we'll open them and just take a few words in the chat about what you either what qualities they might have or how you feel around them. Just people could just pop into the chat a word or two. Comforted, secure, loved and safe, happy. They don't have a hidden agenda. It feels comfortable. Sincere, courage, compassion, deeply inspired, trust, devotion. Yeah, these are beautiful words, right? This is what it, this is the, these are words of people who represent, who live with ethics, you know, and it doesn't have to be somebody, could be, you know, like the Dalai Lama or somebody, but it could also be just a good friend of yours who's always been really ethical. I feel safe with this person. Respect, groundedness, kindness, confidence, calm, love. Yeah. So guess what? We can be that. We can be that too. And this is an incredible thing. And using our mindfulness practice and the power of intention, we can live, we can create a world of beauty within ourselves. And yes, people will argue, yeah, but everybody else is doing this and it's a crazy time and blah, blah, blah. But I think it's no better time than now to live a place of our of ethics as strongly as we can. So one of the ways that we can do this is by looking at what's called what I call the mindfulness ethical precepts or trainings, mindfulness ethical trainings. And those trainings are based, I'm drawing them from the Buddhist precepts, but I think they're very, like, as you can see, you'll see, they're very kind of cross-denominational and they'll be taught, as I said, entirely secularly. So I'm gonna share my screen just for a moment. So, oh, Serena, can I have access to the screen sharing?
Try now.
Okay, thank you. So I want to share what's called the five precepts, and I call them here the five ethical trainings, five mindfulness ethical training. Over the years, as I've tried to teach these, I sometimes come up with cute little acronyms, and in this case, I've come up with METS, the METS, the mindfulness ethical trainings. So, I formulate them all With something that is really important, and that is kind of a
Mm-hmm.
concept of interdependence, or that we're all connected to each other, that we don't develop these practices and we don't become ethical beings if we want to be, because we should, or someone told us we should, or it's, or somebody from up high told us we should. We do it because we recognize how deeply connected we are to everyone in the world, that it is, that we are not separate. So that's why I start each one with knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, knowing how deeply under our lives intertwine. And the first one is, I undertake the training to protect life. So that's that is there, these are put for the most part in the positive, but you can also put them in the negative. So it, undertake the training to protect life also means not to kill, which is, in pretty much every formulation of ethics that you will see, don't kill. But I like it more positive, to protect life. Now, as we meet back in different weeks, I'll go over different ones of these with you. So we'll do a deeper dive into each of them. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, I undertake the training to take only what is offered to me. So that's the training to practice generosity. And it's also the training, and so the negative would be to not steal, also within most every tradition. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, I undertake the training to protect relationships and avoid harming through my sexual energy and actions. So that's about how we, so that has a little bit of the negative, but not harming through our sexual energy, through our sexual activity. And the positive is to protect relationships and protect each other. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, I undertake the training to speak truthfully and wisely. This is one that's a really interesting mindfulness practice. When we go over that, there'll be just a lot of opportunity to explore how to practice wise and truthful speech. And then, knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, I undertake the training to promote a clear mind by being wise with my consumption. So the traditional one and the negative one, well, okay, so sorry, I didn't mention the negative ones for the others. So for the sexual activity one, it's essentially the like typical non-adultery one. Through the speech one, it's not lying, basically. And then this last one is usually formulated as not doing drugs and alcohol, or not doing it in a way that could cause confusion. But I think there's so many other things, and this is also a really fascinating one that we'll get to explore. But it's not just drugs and alcohol, it's all of the things that consume us, all of the, our internet use, our phone use, our relationship to anything that can be could be addictive, or consumption pattern that might not be healthy. And for those of you here, I'm gonna put them in the chat so that you have them. Hold on. Actually, I'm just gonna give you the short one, the short version right now, just so you have it as I continue talking. Okay. And so, just a couple more things I want to say about these is that, well, I mentioned that these trainings are rooted in interconnection. That another thing that's important to know when we look at these guidelines is that intention is really important. So you can have the same act with one intention, with totally different intentions. So you can imagine a person holding a knife, and that person could have an intention to kill, but that person could also be about to cut a cake, right? So it's really what the intent, or they could be a surgeon who's going to heal someone with the knife. So one of the things we can explore when we look at these ethical precepts is how we is the intention behind the action. I also will share with you different versions of these trainings because there's a lot of ways people have explored them over time and they're beautiful versions. And I even encourage people to write their own. And the one that I shared with you is one I've adapted over the years. And I even have like a kid's version of it. And there's a lot of different ones that you can play with. And then the last thing around these guidelines is that if you look at every single one of them, they have a social or political dimension to them. So we can look at it through the lens of our personal life and our personal meditation practice. We can also look at it and the way that we see these guidelines, these ethical trainings manifesting in neighborhoods and communities and institutions, larger global political structures. And in that way, they become very interesting, kind of like audits, ways to audit and think about what's happening out in the world. So that'll be touched on a little bit. So the most important part related to all of us is how do we live a life that's aligned with our integrity? And how do we use our mindfulness practice and our daily life practice to, like, what is this relationship between mindfulness and ethics? And one thing I will say is that when we are ethical, we create a clarity of mind and an absence of remorse. So, if you're a meditator and you've done something that you feel bad about, I guarantee it's going to show up in your meditation. You're going to sit there and stress about it and stress about it and stress about it. When we live in an ethical way, we don't stress about behavior. Oh, why did I steal that? I shouldn't have stolen that. Oh, that was so stupid. That was, that sort of judgmental mind. So when you so and then as we start to have a mind that is clearer, calmer, more at ease, more peaceful, relaxed, it helps us to see to want to live more ethically, right? So there's like a kind of reciprocal relationship with that. It helps us stay aligned with our deepest values and staying in integrity and ethics. And I've known this definitely myself over the years when I have strayed from what I hoped was my ethical behavior, and I've done something, and then it shows up in meditation. It just does. I've had hours and hours and hours of meditating, replaying, and so I learned my lesson the hard way. Nonetheless, I'm a human being, and I still do things. I'm 100% not perfect here. And then our ethical behavior and intent, they also, I mentioned this earlier, it grows out of our meditation practice. So I said that there are these research studies showing this pro-social behavior and so forth. I have seen it with people. I'll just repeat that again, that people report a lot of reason they come into mindfulness practice is to be kinder, to be less reactive, to be less judgmental. And after practicing, they find that they are behaving more ethically. And so we can explore this and we can say, like, oh, is this making me kinder? And the jury is out because it hasn't been like proven, but it certainly seems that that's the direction things are heading with. And we can use the ethical guidelines in daily life as a wonderful mindfulness practice. Okay. And that might be to, I just lost my spot. Ah, here we go. To learn about what do we do when we don't follow them? Notice the sense, like the sense of importance. Okay, let's say you make a commitment to not kill bugs, for instance. That might be something that people do. People decide, I'm not going to kill bugs. And then when we do, for whatever reason, what's happening inside me when I do it? Oh, I feel really important, and that bug is really bugging me, and it deserves to be swatted. Just want to be really clear, and I'm never in this class going to say, "Don't do that, do that." Right? Because what I want you to do is arrive at it yourself in a way using your wisdom, using your clarity, using your mindfulness. Okay. So we want to use the mindfulness to see what impact it has on our mind. And that when we make a mistake, when we are act in ways that are outside of our integrity, that we start again, that we just forgive ourselves and we make amends when necessary, because sometimes we hurt somebody or we hurt ourselves. And we practice forgiving ourselves over and over. What I found as people practice ethics is, as a mindfulness practice, is it usually starts with people doing it because they think they should or someone tells them they should. So it's kind of an external idea. But as they practice over time, they start to see the results in their lives. And that is like wonderful, right? That there's this. Oh, when I act in this way, people feel like I'm more trustworthy. When I'm act in this way, I have this positive result. And then the third level of it is we begin to just embody it. Like, this is who we are. We become one of those people, like a person you imagined before, who just embodies ethics. And it's so beautiful when we find ourselves living from that place. Ethical conduct can be a natural expression of our practice, and it can be connected to a life where we're not blamed, where we're not where there's something in that I love. This actually comes out of the Buddhist teaching called the bliss of blamelessness, the joy of living a life that is thoroughly connected to our goodness, that we're living our life of our deepest values, of our own integrity. And I just want to encourage us to explore that we go forward as we go forward with this. So I'm going to pause for a moment and see if there are any questions about anything I've said so far and see where you are. Thanks, Manjay. And also, I just want to know, I sprung this on you. It's not something that I was preparing you for, like, oh, we're going to jump into ethics. But I was feeling so just looking around at the world going, oh, we need to just focus on ethics right now. I think it might be helpful. It's not easy being human. So you're willing to dive in and we'll do it, and then we'll have some guest teachers, and then we'll keep going until we get through all of them. I see Heather is not David Allen.
Oh, that's right. I didn't change it. I am not David Allen. Yeah, I just wanted to say that something that came in one of the classes I was teaching the other day is people struggling with being surrounded by people who care, but who care through anger, right? Through rage, and how he was getting counsel, he was looking for counsel from me of just that people are thinking he doesn't care because he doesn't want to become the anger, right? And how with mindfulness and the ethical guidelines, how we really learn to be engaged and be in compassion, but with that equanimity where we don't become the hatred or the anger that we ourselves are trying to help transform, right? In others, right? So, or in the world. So I just think it's such a important part of this topic is how do we stay with our hearts open and ethical and wish really truly wishing for good for all beings, even those that we see do harm. You know. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for that comment. That's it's really important, and there is a power within anger, and anger tends to get mixed in with so much reactivity and often desire to harm. But there's also the power of like righteous anger. So I want to distinguish that from like hurtful anger. And I think there are ways that we can harness the power of strong emotion to help us act in ways, and then but also to not veer into the non-harming and the harming. So it's, I mean, you brought up a lot of interesting topics, interesting aspects of it, but I really appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah. I see Manjay's holding up this book. Was there like a, I'm just looking at your book here. It's not easy being human. That a book about ethics?
Hi, it's behind, it's in a background.
Oh, I thought you were saying, here we are talking about ethics, and you're like, it's not easy being
I'm
human.
sorry.
And I'm like, you're
No,
right.
it's my background.
Okay, I was confused.
Well, it's
Anyway,
my
thank
book
you for.
is coming up soon. So I don't know. I just had it before I got in, so it's still there.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for stepping in, by the way. I hope that I know people enjoyed it last week. So thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, my pleasure. Tomorrow morning, we'll have the ADHD class.
Oh, right. So if you're going to jump into the ADHD class, that's Manish, our teacher, and she knows that it's not easy being human.
Thank you.
So someone has asked here, can you talk more about forgiveness in the relationship to ethics? So I'll just talk generally and see if I'm getting at what you're asking, John, but the one of the big ways in which forgiveness plays a role in ethics has to do with self-forgiveness, and then the other way is around other forgiveness. But with self-forgiveness, particularly when we oftentimes we don't live aligned with our values for whatever reason, it can be very subtle, or it can be something that's everybody else is doing it, so it doesn't matter that I'm doing it, but there's a part of us that feels not that's not setting right. So today I was like taking out re I was looking at my recycling, and it's so confusing, right? With recycling, I fight with everybody in my house. I'm like, that goes in the blue bin, that goes in the trash. And I was like, is that an ethical thing that we want to do the recycling as well as we can, or is it just about like being kind to the world? And then there's all this stuff about what's actually happening to the recycling on the other end. Probably you've heard about that, right? So, point being that I just sort of went, Diana, you're not going to get the recycling perfectly. And to just take a moment and pause and be kind to yourself. You're doing the best you can. And so when we do more like serious ethical breach, that's the same attitude I want us to bring to ourselves, and not to let ourselves get away with it, getting that even sounds too strong, but not to. Not sorry, not to be held accountable, right? Because if there's something that we're doing and we're kind of like, oh, never mind, it's not a big deal, I can forgive myself, forget it, there's something a little off there. Versus if we I don't want you to sit and beat yourself up. I want you to bring in forgiveness and then start again. And just like with our meditation practice, when we're meditating, you're with your breath, you lose your attention, you bring it back. You remember to do it. That is starting again. It's the same. I'm being as ethical as I can. Oh, I blew it. I forgive myself, and I keep going. So that's the main way that I think about forgiveness. I think it's more complex when we start thinking about the forgiveness in relation to others, and it's not coming to me immediately. But if you have more questions about it, John, just put it in the chat. Okay, Nancy.
Hi, Diana. I thank you very, very much. Yeah, this is very, very helpful and hopeful to me. But it was so interesting when you said being human, that if you thought that you needed to make an amends to someone and ethically could think about it like I would, or others can think about it, you mentioned it could go on and on. And I thought, how fascinating. Is there something about not feeling ethical that can make, as you mentioned, being human go on and on, thinking about it rather than being such a master of mindfulness as you are, one, it's been mentioned to let the thoughts go like you're on a platform, and the train goes by, or rain. I just thought it was so fascinating that not making an amends to somebody, you mentioned, unless you were mentioning that it doesn't feel like that would be that often that you would be persevering. Is that what
I'm a little confused, Nancy. I'm
about this
sorry.
question?
Question.
About the question. I wondered if not making you said that you could think about it for hours. If
Oh,
you need, if you need per, per what's a great word? If you
persevering.
needed to, yeah, if you needed to make an amends to somebody, and I thought, wow, Diana, one of the best directors of mindfulness, that could happen rather than thinking about thoughts. Well, let me just put it aside, like the I'm at a platform and the train goes by like it's a thought.
Okay, I see your. I think I understand now. Okay, thank you.
I mean, why did that catch you so strongly?
I was thinking about there have been times where I've done some. I mostly it's from my youth, where I did something that I didn't feel good about. And then all I was saying was I've had meditation retreats or meditation sessions where it just replays and replays. And yes, I certainly know how to work with it, but I felt like it was just so interesting to see the ways in which the mind replays the places that we haven't been ethical. And it's almost like it's waiting for us to come with awareness and compassion to hold ourselves in these difficult places. And a lot of that happened sort of early on, but there are times when it still happens today, and I just work with it.
I
It's not the
see.
end of the world. It's just it's these things are intense. We don't want to hurt, most of us don't want to hurt people, and then when we do it, it comes up. So
So just realizing that when you replay it, and when I replay it, that it actually can be trying to work it out, and then eventually figuring out if.
It may just be like it's stuck in a groove, like a record player stuck in a groove, playing and playing and playing. It may be that. It may be
That there is a reason for that. Yeah, different.
it could be a different thing.
Thank you. It just occurred to me because yeah, because I keep learning from you, and it was so fascinating. But I understand that could be even rare, but you are explaining it so that.
Well, there's a story I've told many times
Thank you.
in the past when I was a teenager, I was babysitting for a girl, and I stole from the house of the girl that I was babysitting from. And so this happened when I was like 14, and she had this beautiful dollhouse with all these beautiful doll clothes, and I started to take them. Every time I would babysit, I'd take one and then another and then another. And then one day the mother confronted me and she said, "What happened to such and such's doll clothes?" And I'm like, and then I lied. "Oh, I don't know." So then, like 15 years later, that came up in my meditation. So, these are like strong programming, right? Strong. And I ended up having to make amends. And I did make amends through a lot of different ways. I made amends through talking to the mother, who immediately said, "I have no idea what you're talking about. No problem." So there are ways that things stick in our psyche, and
That's phenomenal, beautiful. One last sentence. I belong to 12-step groups, and we do amends and love and tolerance for everybody, and God willing. And when the anger comes up, we try to work it out with other people, but by figuring out what's my place in it, and making amends. So I appreciate what you said. It meant a lot to me. And I like what you just said now. Thank you so very much.
Of course, of course. So what I'd like to do, it's now 5:15, and Serena, I'm gonna need your help. I'm springing this on you. I know some of you like to like to interact with each other, and some of you don't. So what I will say is, if you want to, what I'm gonna have people do is get into groups of three, and just have an opportunity to talk about like where is ethics in my life? And of all the things, I'll give you the list again. Like, where is the places that I have the most trouble and why? And so you'll each get about 3 minutes per person and a little time to discuss. Now, if you're someone who doesn't want to do that, you're welcome to each to, we'll just say the class ends kind of at this point. And those of you who want to stay and interact, you can do that and you can talk about, like, okay, here's where I am with ethics and this. Oh, and the one that's the hardest for me is my consumption patterns or whatever it is. Okay. And if so, and then when we come back next week, we'll go into one of the different ethical guidelines in a more thorough way.
Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit uclahealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.